Yes, once again, there's the Spokane Symphony playing that good lick from Beethoven, Ninth Symphony, and right in front of me, a great collection of folks from the symphony. Jeff Umsall, who's already been here for Symphony Week, and then Eckhart Proy, and Bethany Scheff, and Mateusz Wolski. And we're going to get into the concept of where orchestras have been going in the last few years. There was years and years and years of classical concerts, and then Pops concerts came along, probably inspired by the Boston Pops decades and decades ago, and symphony has been doing that. And then all kinds of things just bursting up like new plants in the garden. And so let's begin with Jeff Umsall, the artistic director, the executive director of the Spokane Symphony, and jump in on that one, on this whole growth thing of what symphonies do.
Well, good morning, Vern. It's great to be here. Yeah, I mean, it's a constant tenet and tendril of our communication and our internal dialogue is how to remain vibrant, valuable, consistently providing very, very high quality product and output to the community. And we've talked about this before. We talk about it all the time of being a great reflection of our community values and also being a great source of entertainment. So, I mean, the range of articulation of who we are as an organization, I think, just continues to grow. It also becomes, you know, more competitive as more things become available through the very different methods of receiving entertainment, whether it's, you know, going to a live performance or on your phone or anywhere in between. So, you know, I look at it as a great opportunity that we can do so many things and do them so well. The orchestra really responds great to whether it's, you know, doing Beethoven 9 like we just heard, or the music of Harry Potter or other cinema, other current event cultural phenomenon.
Yeah, a lot of which we'll get to. So, Eckhart, good morning. Welcome back from all your many travels and experiences of the summer.
Good morning.
Yeah, and so your part in this, the artistic director of the Spokane Symphony, and as you keep the purpose alive, talk about the range, how far a symphony orchestra can and should range.
Well, I think what we've done in the past years, and actually in the past decade, is really diversify what we do and change the formats, change the locations, make it a little more unpredictable and more accessible to different parts of the population here in Spokane. And what we've tried actually from the very beginning on was to go out and do funky things. If it was Symphony on the Edge, or if it was Symphony with a Splash, or the Best Fest, or even nowadays with the M Show, Harry Potter, Star Wars movies, silent movies, pops, jazz, Ben Folds, all these things go way beyond, you know, our regular classical offering that we have, and all that in mind with how do we, as Jeff mentioned before, stay relevant, and how do we attract more people? And I think we've done a pretty good job. And I think if you look at regional orchestras across the country, a lot of orchestras try to do that, but I think very few do it to the extent and with such a dedication as we do.
Well, if I may observe, from what you were saying a few minutes ago, you have been willing to try, and not everything has worked.
Absolutely, and so we had several series that worked for a while, and then we felt it was time to renew the to come up with a different format, and I always thought that we here in Spokane with the Spokane Symphony were always at the forefront of trying new things. We were never afraid. That's why I always loved this orchestra and this organization. Is nobody put like rocks in your way and kind of prevented you to do something crazy. Mm. We were always in the forefront trying to do new things. And when you do that, you're prone to learn that not everything that you think is cool is actually cool for everybody.
Yeah. Well, and Mateusz Wolski, the concertmaster, before we get into specifically what you're involved with, you've been into all these conversations too. Talk about your observation of the breadth of how many things an orchestra should and shouldn't do.
See, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating because there is a I would say, public perception of what the symphony orchestra is and what it should be. And then there is, you have people in the orchestra that are just regular people like everybody else. And quite often you get approached by a audience members like, so who is your favorite composer? Or what do you listen in the morning when you take shower or something? And truth is that if you start to talk to the musician, turns out that the answers are not quite what would you expect.
It's not just Beethoven.
No, it's definitely not. It's actually quite contrary. I mean, this is our way of life. Therefore, quite often we do have an antidote in the shape and form that it's very unexpected. So that essentially, I think, what symphony is doing these days is exploring the side of things that you would not expect. So it's essentially the concept of expect the unexpected. And from my perspective, which makes for me personally my job very fascinating, is that you have to take risks and jump with both feet and into the pool, and sometimes you don't know if there is a water in it or not. Mm-hmm. And the whole risk taking on part of our organization is absolutely unique, and I think it's very unique in Spokane, and I think it in some ways it represents the spirit of people here, that you know, you work hard during the weekdays, on the weekend you go and do some crazy stuff, mm-hmm. skiing or hiking, and push yourself and do something extraordinary with your life.
Are there any issues of the musician's comfort zone? Any of you can come into this of ever pushing beyond the musician's comfort zone, or are they pretty much game for anything?
You know, it's actually fascinating because we actually encounter almost the contrary situation. Musicians that work for the Spokane Symphony are unionized. So there are certain rules in the workplace that's supposed to be followed, and all of a sudden we sometimes do the things that nobody wrote the rules for. And everybody seems to have a really good time, but now we all of a sudden have to look. It's like, are we breaking any rules or are we not? So it actually creates quite a very interesting type of situations. But I would say majority of musicians are just, it's like the rest of the organization. We're all crazy. And we just say, let's just do it.
Yeah. And Jeff, back to you, because it's your job to keep all this whole thing running, to do the analysis, to decide if something's going to work, if it's going to be financially together and all that. Talk about your actual job in launching new programs.
I think I'm the lucky one. I mean, I get to be part of all these conversations and nominate and be part of thinking about all sorts of new ideas. And then we try to come up with something, as Eckhart said, and go forward with some of them and constantly be pruning, you know, understand what works, what doesn't, be okay with saying, yeah, that was an interesting experiment, now on to the next thing. Of course, there's a financial component that we care about, but I think the financial outcomes are a reflection of our ability to connect with our audiences. And it's that vibrancy that we're talking about here that I even just feel in the room as we are discussing this, it does translate to the audiences, and I think they're pretty excited. And the musicians too, they're game. You know, the fact that we're doing the M show, when I talk to my colleagues and, you know, my peers around the country, you know, what are we doing? A lot of times the dialogue is sort of bemoaning the perennial challenges of finances, et cetera. I feel, not that we're excluded or completely eliminated from that, but the dialogue here and the vibrancy is really special. Nobody's doing the M show that I've talked to other places. That's pretty cool. And I think that momentum that we have right now, I hope we can ride this wave for a long time. So, I mean, to go back to answer the question, I try to synthesize it all. I try to, like, really listen, really understand what really is happening. The energy is self-perpetuating. And for a long time, you know, just us pushing, it will work. Eventually, we need to sit back and ask ourselves, so does the audience really love it? Or is it a false positive, you know? I think we're onto a lot of really good stuff. I think we are very great example of what orchestras can be for their community. And it's something that I hope we can keep doing for a long time.
Well, you have one interesting special a month over the next 4 months. Let's talk about them in order. The soiree in September, in October, the Harry Potter show, in November, the M show, and then in December, the Baroque series. So let's, the oldest of these series is the soiree series, and I guess anybody can jump in on this, but certainly Mateusz, you've been as chamber music for orchestra musicians. Talk about that.
You know, I think this has been a program that has been running for a while in the orchestra, and I think it has been a wonderful idea. It had a wonderful outcome, and the reasons are numerous. One of them, we don't have a conductor when we play Suarez. No, sorry, I just had to take a jump at Eckhart here. And he's throwing his phone at me right now. Yeah, nice. Anyway, so, yeah. No, essentially, I think it's absolutely wonderful that musicians are given opportunity to work with each other without supervision, and the truth, the realities of the job quite often are that in the typical orchestra setting, we run in, we prepared, we do rehearse, we put on the show. Occasionally, you have a chance to spend some time with your colleagues, but quite often, you know, especially if you have kids or families, you just go home. When you're put in a setting of chamber music, and all of a sudden you can spend some time, kind of discussing ideas of how to play music and get an input, you get to know your colleagues better. So I think as a team building exercise, it has been incredibly successful. And also, I mean, for the audiences to be able to not to look at the sea of violins, violas, or cellos, all of a sudden meet the individuals during the soirees. I think, and quite often, the part of the tradition of soirees is that various members would introduce the pieces, which I think we all took a cue from Eckhart, how wonderful it is for the audience to actually kind of understand what they're listening to. And I think that's been a great challenge and a great lesson for all of us. And I think most of the time we really love doing it. So.
And there's one soiree for each season, fall, winter, and spring. And the fall one is the last Tuesday and Wednesday of this month, the 25th and 26th, and that will include a trio, a quartet, and a quintet. So now let's move to the mother of small children that keeps her perpetually young and also perpetually slightly crazy, and in the best sense of the word. Bethany Shepp, will profile you for a minute, and you can come in and defend yourself, because you've been on the real ground floor of the things like the Harry Potter things and the other engagements with kid popular culture, haven't you?
Yeah, and I would prefer to call it organized chaos at this moment, which is basically a good way to explain what's going on with Harry Potter right now. We're kind of in the mix of getting things going, but the show is, it'll be our third consecutive year doing the Harry Potter Halloween type of show. We do want to mix it up each time, though. We want a completely different theme, and this theme is Deathly Hallows. But it's actually Haunted Hallows, the music of Harry Potter. So we're kind of focusing on the later movies. And we are going to have a lot of the lobby activities be featuring things from the later movies as well. So we're very fortunate to own our hall, which means we can expand and have more ideas and really draw the crowd, not only for what is the main experience, the concert, but before the concert, they can come and enjoy things in the lobby, and we'll have Hagrid's cabin with pumpkin patch. We'll have the Deathly Hallows, sort of a backdrop with the trees, and we're actually going to have a green screen technology area where they can be the Cloak of Invisibility. Jim Swoboda from Civic, and he also has his own company. He's going to help me with that, and we have our castle in the lobby as usual, our bar, Diagon Alley type area.
Yeah. And most of all, costumes.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about costumes.
Well, a lot of our patrons are the ones who really bring a lot of the spirit to the concert, because they come dressed up, and we want to encourage the audience to dress up to really make it this magical land. And we have Civic, actually, is going to be helping us, and they will be characters. And we're going to have the professional ballet school dancers, and we'll have magic. We have magicians from Silverwood that will be helping us. And it'll all be kind of a very cool new experience for Harry Potter.
And rotating back to what Matej was saying about the attitude of orchestral players, you almost have to prevent them from going over the top on costumes, don't you?
Yeah, sometimes. But we do, you know, we do allow for Halloween. You know, maybe don't come dressed as an alien for the Harry Potter type show, but usually they get into the spirit. And if they don't want to dress up, we provide the scarf, which we have scarves, wands, robes that are available for our patrons too, but we're going to have those available to the musicians, and they can.
But some of the musicians really get into it.
They do. They do. Some of them are pretty elaborate, pretty awesome. Maybe we need a contest for the musicians.
Yeah, you do. I mean, Eckhart, you're smiling over this.
Yeah.
talk about what you've seen in that.
I was just thinking, how am I going to dress up? Because usually you're, you know, Professor Snipes. So, I mean, you know, as a conductor, you need to move. So you're kind of a little bit limited by what you can do. But what I want to say about the show is that last year I went there in the audience with my daughters, and this was a very unique experience because it is an experience. It is not just a show. It is an experience. But from the moment you walk in, and you can do potions, and you can buy wands, and you can do all sorts of things, and it's very I think. What orchestras are trying to do is to keep up with movies and with Cirque du Soleil and all these things to make it really much more impactful, and I'm really excited to conducting the show, not only because I love the Harry Potter music and John Williams, but also because we're sticking with kind of a more Halloween oriented theme also musically. And so we have music from the movie Coco, we have music from How to Train Your Dragon, and some Stravinsky as well, and then I've done, of course, all sorts of music from Harry Potter, and it's going to be I'm really, really excited about the musical part too.
You know, even as you said Stravinsky, it kind of strikes me that in a certain way what Stokowski launched 80 years ago has now completely blossomed from the ultimate fantasia in a way, hasn't it, in this show?
I mean, we definitely can do something now that he couldn't back then, but probably dreamed of doing. And so this whole multimedia experience that we're providing in the hall and in front of the house is quite amazing. And what I'm in particular excited about is that, you know, an idea we had early on, since Harry Potter is all about magic, to actually have a magician on stage who then does magic, and it's not just a card trick. I mean, I think we can expect something a little more substantial than that.
Cut a concert master in half or something like that. Hey.
Something like that.
And Eckhart told me that I asked him if he would conduct this, because usually Morihiko's been doing these shows, but he wasn't available, and I thought, okay, let's try to get Eckhart. And he said, okay, I'll do it if you can get me a magician. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
throw a challenge at Bethany. You just wait. It's going to happen.
And that show, which is on the weekend preceding Halloween, it's on the 27th of October. And there are two shows that day at 2 and 8, and it tends to sell out, as I remember. It's a pretty popular one. Then along comes November, and here's shades of the kind of thing that you might have happen. Let's listen to this. Thank you. Okay, there we go. That brought the house down. Mateusz, the M show, that was from the M show you did right there in late May, and that was with a beatbox. You're always just looking for something, aren't you?
I am definitely. See, I mean, as your audience might get that, yeah, you have a bunch of crazy people in your studio right now, and they were crazy enough to run with my crazy idea of what if we do something that has never been done before. You know, let's chart some unexplored waters of taking a group of classical musicians and essentially smashing them with the genres, with the ideas that seem completely not fitting. You know, for me, the whole philosophy is how can I take a classical musician and put him in a situation where nobody would ever envision him, and then somehow make it work? Or actually, can I produce a different quality? And, you know, this particular, you know, Paganini 24th Caprice, I always felt that there's a groove to it, and I found the young, very promising beatboxer, and I thought, hey, nobody's ever done this before, definitely not live. Why don't we do it? I think you know, that's a like very unexplored territory. So, and also as we talked with the before of us trying different things, you know, one of the things is that we do live in the 21st century. So big component of the M show is actually recording a high quality videos of the things that I'm not able to bring to life on a stage, especially if I need something that is very vast and majestic. And we mentioned before, there's a wonderful collaborator in our arts community, Jim Svoboda, who owns a company called ILF Media, who mainly does, you know, commercial work. So they are very high skilled professionals, and he graciously is lending me his equipment and stuff and expertise to bring some of the crazy concepts of we did some videos of I don't know what happens if you put three musicians out in a frozen park, and can they still play instrument? Mm-hmm. You know, I had a challenge with our principal oboe where I would dunk into the pool and he would be playing on top of the surface and see who can last longer. You know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Mm-hmm. That is, on one hand, sciencey. On the other hand, it is funny. But also, it allows us to record and capture some of the challenges, which mm-hmm. musicians love.
Yeah.
And eventually, my vision is that we are going to start producing some of this material and putting it actually available for people to see. On YouTube or through other means. So I think that there's definitely, for me, the vision is to make it multimedia, make it accessible when you can make it or make it, you cannot, and just meet us and find out what we are about.
Mm-hmm. And by the 16th of November, you're going to have some idea of what you're doing. What are some of the things that are gestating?
Oh, right now, see, I mean, this vision, I did a show in which I pitted essentially brass players versus poor little me violinist. Was a lot of fun.
Versus artists.
Yes, okay. Yes. Then we had a show where I really wanted to focus on the wind players and our dynamic. So of course the next logical step is going to be, what if you put a bunch of string players together and you start to explore the idiosyncrasies? You know, I mean, the truth is that there is a tremendous amount of competition that you don't see. You just think we're all working in a harmony of 20 violins, playing really nicely together. Now, if you scratch the surface, that might not be always the case. So it's a fascinating concept of human dynamic and, you know, competition between the variety of instrument groups, you know, things that you can do with the violin that you cannot do with cello and vice versa. So that's what I'm envisioning for the for this first M show this season.
It sounds like you're trying to create something for Fox TV or something.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, I mean, well, we'll see what comes out. Okay. But there's definitely, you know, I have a lot of fantastic partners in crime.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be very entertaining. Yeah. And then the next show that we're going to do in the spring, I want to explore percussion. Mm-hmm. I want to explore all the angles of what the percussion is doing, what they can do, mm-hmm. and that is whole other dimension. You know, if you ever watch like Blumen Group, that's for example something that a bunch of percussionists just put a blue masks on or latex mm-hmm. on their faces and came out with a completely new quality that has never been done before. Mm-hmm. And in classical music world, we do also this, maybe not that crazy, but who knows what I'm going to ask our poor percussionists to do. So, they're going to be surprised.
And so the M show, it's the Washington Cracker Building again, I presume.
No, this time we're shopping. We're still in the final stages of shopping for a new location. So stay tuned. We'll let you know as soon as we will settle for sure. But yeah, well, I mean, the concept of the show was also a little bit to move, explore spaces as well as explore the topics. So you know, we kind of are in that exploratory mood, shall I say?
So that'll be November 16th and 17th for the Fall M Show. And then from the something to the sublime, we get to the Baroque concert, which was also just a lovely thing that kind of burst upon us last year. Talk about that, Eckhart, because it was really lovely.
Well, so my feeling always was that regional orchestras, just by design and also by the size of the halls, are used to playing big repertoire, because of the need to sell tickets, so there needs to be a big blockbuster, Tchaikovsky Symphony, you name it, on the program. And because of that, I always felt that Baroque music, like a century worth of music and more, was neglected and was given to smaller separate ensembles with smaller audiences. And I also feel that playing Baroque music is very educational and team building for an orchestra, in particular for the string section, but also for the winds. I mean, there's just no hiding, and it's all very, very, very delicate and very, very precise. And so I always felt like, you know, for us to get better as an orchestra, and also to diversify and not to neglect basically what all our major music is built upon, that we needed to do something to really promote that music, and also to diversify our locations. And so we go out in the community into to different locations in the valley, but also here, and discover all these composers that, you know, some we have never heard of, and of course also like Bach and Handel. But it's always a lot of fun. I mean, this music was composed to either celebrate God or to have fun. I mean, very often both, mm-hmm. and also, you know, most of these pieces are fairly short. You know, there's like usually like there's no Vivaldi concerto that's longer than 10 minutes. I mean, that seemed mm-hmm. to be kind of the attention span mm-hmm. people in the Baroque era had. It was 10 minutes long. And until, of course, the Bach and the Masses, and so they're longer. But the concertos and the symphonies and sinfonias, and so they're all just, you know, 10 minutes pretty much. And so you can build a very diverse program in 60 minutes with all sorts of things, and you can highlight relationships between composers. And that's always important to me, that, you know, you always think of Bach also as, you know, this God who's somewhere way, way, way past somewhere, but that he was just a normal human being with all his flaws and kind of the humanize you know, people that lived, you know, 300 years ago.
And so that series that you originated, you're sharing with Jorge this year, aren't you?
Yes. So we have two different programs. One is kind of Christmas themed, where Matush is going to play Vivaldi The Winter from the season. We're going to do something from Bach the Christmas Oratorio and other things that mm-hmm. that people might not have heard of. Very, very fun Christmas music. And then Jorge Luis Uzcategui, our assistant conductor, is going to perform a program based on the relationship of Bach and Handel, because they both were born in very much the same area, except that Handel traveled the world, you know, both to Italy and then ended up in London, while Bach stayed very much focused in a very, 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 very small area. And of course, stylistically, even though they lived at the same time, almost identical, that stylistically they went totally different paths. And of course, an important part of these concerts are also the Spokane Symphony Chorale, because, you know, particularly in the Baroque era, the human voice was such an important part of musical expression.
Absolutely. And so the first of these is the 8th and 9th of December at Westminster Congregational Church in town, and then at the Valley Nazarene Church on Sullivan Road. So that's a quick overview of four unique things that the symphony does, one per month throughout this fall. So thank you to the four of you who have shared time with us, Mateusz.
Thank you.
And Jeff.
Thank you.
And Eckhart, of course. And certainly Bethany.
Thanks.